from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Wednesday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. A very special, happy KMOX day to you. It is November 20th, 11:20. So it is KMOX day, and we've been able to celebrate throughout the course of the day, and we will continue to do that. I didn't realize Michael Calhoun during Total Information PM was running a bunch of old promos and things like that that were that was fun. That was really cool to be able to hear back some of that stuff, which was really good. And for somebody like me that grew up listening to the station, for many people like you who probably have a lot of great memories of the station as well, it's fun to be able to go back and hear the history of the station as we continue to move forward as well. With that, reminder for you, when we get done at 8 o'clock tonight, it is the Gas House Gang. So you actually get 3 hours of me tonight because I'll be joined by Tom Ackerman for the Gas House Gang from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock this evening here on KMOX. We've got a lot coming up on the program. Our guy, Bernie Miklas, he's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so at 6:20. To start off next hour, we're going to talk with Andrew Wagner, covers the Brewers, and it's yesterday Pat Murphy won the National League Manager of the Year Award, so we'll talk with him about that. We'll also talk to about their offseason, because the indication is that Devin Williams is likely to get traded. Is that going to happen? How soon could it happen? And what are the expectations for next season? On another year where the Brewers were kind of downplayed by most people, including myself, and then they end up winning the division. Also coming up next hour, we're going to talk with Kevin Kalish. He is the head men's soccer coach over at St. Louis University as they are getting ready to open up their run in the NCAA tournament coming up tomorrow. Some breaking news. The Cy Young Award winners have been announced. If you are shocked by this, you haven't paying attention. Because you know, yesterday, I thought Stephen Vogt was going to win the American League Manager of the Year Award. I could make arguments yesterday on the National League side for any of those three guys. Whether it was Pat Murphy, Mike Schilt, or Carlos Mendoza, any of those guys could have easily won that award. And you could make arguments, I think, for any of them. Now, the voting overwhelmingly went with Murphy, but I think there was ways to you know, make the argument for any of them. I don't think there's ways to make arguments for the other guys tonight. Tarek Skubal wins it, the Detroit pitcher, and then Chris Sale, the Braves pitcher, wins it on the National League side of things. Not a shocker. So that's where that's at. And yeah, good for those guys. And just fun to see these awards continue to move forward. We'll talk a fair amount of baseball on the program today. Do want to start real quick with the Blues, and we'll get Bernie's thoughts on, and then we'll circle back to the Blues coming up later on this hour, because There's kind of two stories right now. Story number one is they're just not very good. They've lost six of their last seven. They're giving up a ton of third period goals. Like yesterday they gave up three. Admittedly, one of them is an empty netter. So even if they just give up the two, it's still too many. That's just been something that's been happening recently. They are really, I was gonna say snake bit. I don't even know if that's like the snake bit indicates like bad luck. They're not snake, but this is not a luck, unlucky type situation. There was that game against Buffalo last week where Jordan Kyrou hit the post. I guess that's bad luck when you get that close and you're not able to convert. But this is not a lucky versus unlucky type situation for the Blues. They're just not playing good enough hockey right now. So that's one thing. And the other bummer on that is, it was the first game back for Robert Thomas, and you would think that the team would get kind of a bump from having him back, and it didn't really feel that way. So they've got to figure this thing out at some point. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they are a Stanley Cup contending team or anything like that, but they are. I think they're better than they're showing right now. Now, all that being said, I keep repeating this over and over and over, and I will continue to repeat this over and over and over until it's not really the case anymore. They're 4 points out of a playoff spot. They've got 17 points right now. The final playoff team is Vancouver in the West, 21 points. Not a big deal. If the Blues kind of turn it around, like this is where Kevin Wheeler and I actually, I think, disagreed a little bit during our 5:15 sports today, because I brought that up, and he's like, well, you got to go on a pretty good winning streak. I don't think you do. You just got to go play better hockey and, you know, win more games than you lose and things like that. And I think you're going to slowly but surely knock down that deficit again. Only 4 points separating the Blues from a playoff. So also, interestingly enough, only 4 points separate the Blues from being the worst team in the conference. The Chicago Blackhawks have 13 points. The Blues have 17. So you can, this is one of those things where you like spin numbers. You can push it in either direction. You can sit here and say, oh, well, the Blues are only 4 points out of a playoff spot. True. The Blues are only 4 points away from being the worst team in the Western Conference. Also true. So that's where, and we're not just worst team in the Western Conference, worst team in the NHL, because the worst team in the East is Montreal and Detroit, along with Columbus. Those three teams off 16 points. So Chicago with 13. By the way, the jerseys, the sweaters for the Winter Classic came out. I like them. I heard from people today that did not like them. A lot of people thought maybe the Blackhawks jersey looked better than the Blues jersey. I guess I can buy that. I don't have a problem with the blue note not being on the front. The first time ever. It's still pretty noticeable on the shoulder, and it's actually kind of a different looking blue note. They kind of get this retro look. So I like the sweaters. I think they look good. It'll be fun to see them wearing them in the Winter Classic. The other Blue story, and we'll talk about this, Jim Montgomery's all of a sudden available. Former Blues assistant was in Boston. He got let go. He's a coaching free agent, has a lot of connections to the Blues, and he's already, not by me, but he's already been connected to the Blues. There was a piece in The Athletic today that featured the top four likely destinations for Montgomery next, because he's going to get another job, and they listed the Blues number one. So I don't know if that puts a little pressure on Drew Bannister or not, but I'm sure Bannister would rather his team start picking up some victories with that hanging out there. All right, we will. When we come back, we're going to hear from Bernie Miklas. We'll talk with him about all those things plus much more. Our guy joins us in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Is presented by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Back at it here on KMOX. We're going to talk with Bernie Miklas here in just a moment or so, as we have our weekly conversation with Bernie. A lot of things to get to with him coming up in just a moment here on KMOX. And again, a reminder for you, next hour, Andrew Wagner is going to join us, and we're also going to talk with Kevin Kalish, the men's soccer coach at St. Louis University. So we've got quite the group that we are talking to today, and certainly looking forward to that. So yeah, we'll get Bernie on coming up in just a moment. Want to get his thoughts on the Blues and the Jim Montgomery news, and whether or not that could result in something here. Again, I'm not calling for Drew Bannister to get fired. I certainly am not doing that, but it is hockey and coaches lose their jobs. And if that happens with Montgomery out there, does that make the Blues more willing to make a change? I don't know. So we'll go through that. Wanted to talk to him, and again, we'll get him on the line in just a moment or so. Torrey Holt is back on the finalist list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, last year it felt like there was a chance that he was going to be able to get in. It didn't end up happening, and now we'll see. And the thing about this is every year new guys get onto the ballot. That makes it sometimes a struggle, and Bernie Miklas does join us now. Bernie, appreciate you taking time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Always a pleasure to talk with you. How are you doing?
I am good. I've remembered you talking in the past about being in the room for when the voting's going on for Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I know you have presented on people's behalf before, both St. Louis Cardinals and St. Louis Rams. Are you still involved? I'm just saying, you know, in terms of Torrey Holt, I'm curious who's advocating for him. Who is that right now? Are you still involved in that? What is that process like?
No, I'm retired from the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection committee. I had a long run, and it was very enjoyable and satisfying, and also served on the Veterans Committee, helped get guys like Jerry Kramer in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and many others. Howard Balzer, a longtime football writer here in St. Louis, now living in Arizona, you know, and he's still an officer in the Pro Football Writers Association, so he represents, you know, St. Louis Rams candidates that are still out there like Torrey Holt. And he does a really good job Because I've reviewed it with him every year. Like some of the things, I compare notes. I find some other things maybe to offer to H if he hadn't heard about this or that. So he's well prepared and he makes a good presentation. I think maybe Torrey Holt's got a good chance this time, but it's a strange situation because there's always wide receivers stacked up on the runway. And, you know, you can't have a class that's all wide receivers. You know, there's only five modern day candidates maximum who get in every year, you know. And so it's a type of thing where if it's a benefit of the doubt, I know from being in the room, you know, rather than like try to get three wide receivers in there, you know, you just realize there's equal players at other positions, and you know, we should account for players at other positions as long as they are as great at what they did as the receivers were at what they did. And, you know, it's just it's sort of a thankless task at times because people think for some reason, you know, we're allowed to vote like 28 guys in every year or something. And I always used to say, in fact, I got into a big argument with Marshall Faulk one time because, you know, after two of these three things, he would say, "What, you guys are crazy. How come you don't have this guy in? And this is just ridiculous. You guys ought to be embarrassed." I said, "Okay, before you go on the NFL Network, though, Marshall, so make sure when you go on the NFL Network and complain about this and talk about how stupid we are, you make sure you tell everyone who you would have taken out. Like, in other words, who would you have left out?" And you know what, Marshall? You're not going to say that because you don't want to offend a guy that was one of your peers. So I said, you know, people like that always want to rip the committee, but someone prominent in the media, they'll never say who they would have displaced to get their guy in, you know? So it gets a little, it used to get very irritating in a lot of ways, but I took it very, very seriously and put a lot into it.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. I always feel like I appreciate the guys in the room working on it, even at times when I get frustrated. And you see the new candidates that come in. You know, this year it's an Eli Manning and Antonio Gates and a Jared Allen. And when you're holding on for somebody who's already been on the list before, I think you get worried every single time you see a new crop come in because it almost feels like some players are even further away.
Yeah, I know. That's Torrey Holt's kind of slipped through the cracks. But the thing of it is, I don't have the information in front of me. But he's been a finalist a bunch of times, and there is a history in voting. If you've been a finalist more than say like two times, you eventually get in. I mean, like the percentage of that is like 100%. It's just that he's had to wait a little longer, and I give him a lot of credit because he's been really, really classy and really patient with it. He doesn't lash out and throw tantrums the way like Terrell Owens did because he wasn't a first ballot guy, as if he had an inalienable right to be a first ballot guy. Never mind the fact there were other receivers just as great, if not better than him. But, you know, he wouldn't even attend his own induction ceremony. I mean, so he does. So Torrey Holt, you know, he has never been a baby about this. I really, really admire his class in being patient, and I'm hoping this is the year. But there's other wide receivers. There's always other wide receivers, and it makes it tough, and you never know who all of a sudden there'll be this sudden push to get some guy in who maybe wasn't being pushed as hard. I don't have any say in that, so I can't push back because I'm no longer in the room.
Bernie Miklas continues to join us for a weekly conversation here on Sports Open Line. Did you have much of a reaction to Pat Murphy winning the Manager of the Year award yesterday? I thought all three candidates you could make arguments for, Schilt and Mendoza as well. I was a little surprised how overwhelmingly Murphy was voted in.
Well, you know, the thing about those awards, especially when it comes to team-oriented awards like Manager of the Year, Derek Gould is the one that pointed me out to this. Joe Strauss did too. A lot of times the votes are based on who – it's a reflection on the writers who vote, not – it's a reflection on how far off base they were in their preseason predictions.
Yeah.
In other words, Craig Council leaves Milwaukee. Boy, oh, my gosh, that's a huge loss. So the Brewers can't possibly win this division again. I know some people thought they would, but like by and large, no, they were written off. So therefore, because they win the division and win it easily, and we, all of us baseball writers, were wrong about that. Well, that must mean that Pat Murphy's the Manager of the Year. You see how that goes? It's really kind of, if you think about it, it's really kind of almost devious. It's like, listen, this isn't about whether your predictions were right. It's about maybe who did the best job. And I think he did a great job. Don't get me wrong. I think he was deserving. And people got to remember that this is a regular season award. It's not a postseason award. But I thought there was a really strong case for Mike Schilt. I mean, his second most wins in the history of the franchise. He took a very volatile, very nasty, very divided clubhouse and made it whole and just built a nice culture in no time. And they were just, they were just a killer in the second half of the season. So I think Schilt was just as deserving. But I really just can't sit here and say anybody was wrong for voting for Pat Murphy. But I do say, yeah, part of it is because it's like, well, you know, because you didn't know how to pick the division, which is fine. That doesn't mean the guy that won the division is necessarily manager of the year. It's because it's not about your predictions. So take yourself out of it as voters.
I think there is some humor in the fact that Craig Counsell never won it in Milwaukee, even with all those teams that overachieved. And then Murphy wins it in his first year while Craig is struggling in Chicago.
Yeah. And how about Schilt's career? You know, so 2019, he's the manager of the year. In 2021, his final year as the Cardinals manager, he finished third. And this is his first year back as a manager, and now he finishes second. So I don't even count 2020 as a full year. So if you just look at the full years Mike Schilt's had as a manager, 2019, 2021, and 2024, he's finished first or second or third. In all of those years. I mean, I think that's an incredibly impressive achievement. And I don't think that part of it's gotten enough national attention.
No, you're right.
How many guys get named? Basically, every year they've managed a full season, they've made the podium in the manager of the year voting, either the gold, the silver, or the bronze. That's really impressive.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, I feel like to become a manager of the year, either it is you really outdo expectations, or maybe you have a horrible start to the season and turn it on. You know, if Mendoza would have won, that would have been the excuse for that. The team was terrible for a while and then they turned it on, or you just have a team that is just a behemoth and you can't help. But you know, like if a Dave Roberts wins it from the Dodgers, one of those type years. But for one of those three circumstances to happen to the same guy year after year after year is incredibly unlikely.
It is, and I think he was well deserving, and he's really a heck of a manager. I mean, there's no other way to get it. He used to drive me nuts after games with kind of the scratching and clawing, you know, and all the just like all the time. And I mean, come up with some new material, and he would take exception if you know people in the media asked like, well, why'd you lose this series and blah, blah, blah. And he'd get real mad about stuff. He was a nice guy though. But so I used to not like his post game stuff that was on TV, and I would make fun of it, frankly, on the radio. And people thought that meant that I didn't like him as a manager, that he was lousy as a manager. Well, quite the contrary, because the post game stuff's got nothing to do with his managing. Time has proven yet again, he's very good running a baseball team.
Last thing for you before we get you out of here, the Blues lose again yesterday. They don't get a bump from Robert Thomas being back. All the while, Jim Montgomery's been let go in Boston, and he has ties to the team and to the city. In no way, shape, or form am I calling for Drew Bannister to be fired, but there was already a piece that ran in The Athletic today that mentioned the most likely landing spots for Montgomery, and they listed the Blues first. If anything, it feels like maybe there is a little bit more pressure on Bannister now that you've got Montgomery hanging out there as a free agent.
Well, and this gives me a chance to promote the fact that I did a YouTube video on my Bernie Miklas Show channel today. It's still up there. People can go see it. And one of the points I made is, look, I feel unfair. I feel it's unfair to talk about, well, bring Jim Montgomery in and displace Bannister. I'm not saying that this is fair to make the case, but hockey coaches are fired every 8 minutes, basically. So let's not act like that this would be one of the most sinister things ever done to a coach. And the other thing, and I'm talking about if they don't get their act together soon, because they are really, really wallowing now. And worst record in the league since October 26th. They've scored only 7 goals in their last, 10 goals in their last 7 games. The lack of effort is pretty glaring. So here, and I don't want to go on too long, so tell me when to wrap it up. But Here's my thing about this. It's a brutal, brutal existence when you're an NHL coach. So it might not be fair, this idea that Drew Bannister, as the full-time coach, interim label gone, he's only 20 games into his first season. However, if you're the general manager that fired Craig Berube, the only guy to win a Stanley Cup in franchise history, and you decided, I'm going to fire him because we need to make the change, and the replacement is a no-name coach who's unestablished, Drew Bannister, then if you had the gumption to do that, then why wouldn't you have the same gumption when you have a guy, Jim Montgomery, that Doug Armstrong loves, and he would have hired him had the Bruins fired him after last year's playoffs, but they kept him. If Montgomery was your guy all along, and he was, and you had the stones to fire a Stanley Cup winning coach, well, what, you're going to get bashful now about hiring the guy that you wanted in the first place? I mean, I'm not being cold towards Drew Bannister, but let's not act like children. I mean, this is a very, very tough league where coaches get devoured all the time.
Are you a zero-sum game kind of guy that if you sit there and say Jim Montgomery is greater than Drew Bannister, then there should be no other considerations?
No, I wouldn't say that, but you know, the other considerations like fairness. Well, he's only had 20 full games, you know, as a full-time head coach. That's not fair to remove him this early. That's a consideration. I'm acknowledging it. That's a consideration. I don't feel good about making it sound like I'm saying do it right now. But here's the thing. If you spend too much time about worrying about that consideration, well, how much time do I give him? Oh, we better give him at least maybe till Christmas. You think Jim Montgomery's going to sit around and wait and wait and wait and wait when other teams are calling him? So you risk losing him by delaying. If in fact, this is something you want to do, but you're holding out because you want to see if Bannister can get this thing turned around. Well, the question is, how long do you wait before you encounter a very real risk of losing Jim Montgomery because you waited too long?
Yeah. And look, there are some teams out there. I look specifically at Montreal, Detroit, and Pittsburgh, especially Pittsburgh, teams that are underachieving with high expectations, where if they decide to pull that trigger, I'm sure they'll be looking Montgomery's way.
I'd put Nashville on that list too. They're underachieving, you know.
Yeah.
And there's the natives are restless down there too.
As restless as they can be in Nashville?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they get pretty wound up.
Bertie, appreciate your time as always. And of course, before we let you go, we want to remind folks, you mentioned your YouTube channel at The Bernie Show, the at symbol, The Bernie Show on YouTube. Hopefully all of our listeners subscribe and watch your videos on a daily basis. And of course, you are brought to us every day by
Saliga Heating and Cooling. And you want me to talk about them for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, first of all, you know, been in St. Louis since 1927. They're an independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealership, and they have been taking care of us for a long, long time, 15, 16 years at the Miklas home, and we've come to appreciate them because of their integrity, their knowledge, the fact that we can trust them. And listen, when you've been around since 1927, the same family continuously owned this. Let's keep this simple. Who can you trust in this business? What do you look for when you're trying to make a decision? Well, one family continuously owned since 1927, almost 100 years, and they're still going strong. They're still growing, and more St. Louis families are calling them. They passed the credibility test, if you ask me, and they certainly passed the trustworthiness test, because if you weren't reliable that way, you still wouldn't be here. But Saliga Heating and Cooling, backed by American Standard, is very much here. Hey, they have financing available for you for qualified buyers, and they have a maintenance program. You can get your heating, make sure everything's okay before the harsh stuff comes. Same in the summer with the air conditioning. We're members of the Priority Club program, and I would encourage you to take a look at that. But they can do anything you need them to do, big or small or somewhere in between. And it's not just heating and cooling. They have other services as well. Go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, to see all the services and more info about the Priority Club. And you can call them at 314-481-7333. Thank you, Matt.
Back at it on KMOX. A very special happy KMOX day to you. It is 11:20, so on 11:20, we celebrate 11:20 a.m. KMOX. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you till 8 o'clock. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Andrew Wagner's good. Join us. He covers the Brewers. Pat Murphy winning Manager of the Year award yesterday. I think it's an interesting offseason for the Brewers. They're expected to trade away St. Louis and Devin Williams. So we'll talk to him about that. And then Kevin Kalish, who is the coach of the Sluman soccer team, as they get ready to open up their NCAA tournament run tomorrow evening at home against Kansas City. He is going to join us as well. Welcome your phone calls, your text messages, and your tweets here between now and 7 o'clock. If you've got any thoughts on what's going on with the Blues and whether or not you would be interested in seeing them make a move with Jim Montgomery out there. You know, I do kind of pause, and I listened to what Bernie just said when we talked about this a few moments ago, and I have a hard time disagreeing with anything that Bernie said, but I feel kind of dirty with the idea that Drew Bannister could be out of a job so soon in his tenure because of somebody being available. I had a really interesting Twitter exchange with a listener recently, and you know, we don't get that on social media very often, but I enjoy conversations where I get challenged for something that I say. As I've said before, I'm a big believer that if you say it, you need to be able to defend the words that come out of your mouth. And I've taken some issues with Drew Bannister here recently, but my issues with him, honestly, haven't been so much about his job as a coach, which I guess I can take issue with because the team's not playing especially good hockey, but I've just been frustrated with things that he said. And maybe I'm being too hard on him. Maybe I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt when this is a guy who hasn't been in this role before, where you say something somewhat nondescript and somebody like me is going to go do a sentence breakdown and try to figure out what's wrong with it. So maybe I'm being a little picky on it, but there's been some things that Bannister has said that I haven't really liked. And I've mentioned that. His ability as a hockey coach, I'm sure he is a perfectly good hockey coach. I am not the person to evaluate a hockey coach. I have no reason to believe he is anything but a good, solid hockey coach. So somebody came at me, that sounds like negative, like it was a big confrontation. Somebody just tweeted at me and basically said they were surprised at my comments about Bannister because I'm on KMOX, and KMOX is a powerful signal, and he is the coach of our hometown team, the St. Louis Blues, and I should be careful in what I say. And he wasn't accusing me, the person tweeting at me wasn't accusing me of trying to get Drew Bannister fired, but there was kind of like that underlying tone there that maybe he thought that's what I was trying to do, and it really isn't. I think you probably know me well enough now for me doing this the last 2.5 years. I am not somebody that really calls for people to get fired. I always look at the human element first, and that is that's just not in my DNA to spend a lot of time trying to get people fired. So when I'm critical of Drew Bannister, I'm not critical as a way to get this guy out of a job. I'm critical because my job is to evaluate the job he's doing. And as much as it is about coaching hockey, when you are in a front-facing position like that, the comments that you make are part of the job as well, and I was critical of him on that. And then this Jim Montgomery thing happens where he gets let go. And, man, let's not like... Montgomery checks every box. Checks every single box. Has a home in St. Louis, married to a St. Louisan, has ties to the organization, was an assistant coach for Craig Berube. The Blues helped him out at a time where he was at a weird spot in his career because of some things that happened and kind of gave him a landing spot. And he needed to have it here in St. Louis because this is where he was going to be living at the time. Like, just everything. And he's a really good coach. He's a really good coach. Has a relationship with Doug Armstrong, has a relationship with a bunch of players who are on the roster right now. The man checks every single box. Now, what we don't really know, does he need a break? He just got let go in Boston. Is this a guy who needs to take a seat on the couch and breathe for a little bit? And maybe so. or maybe he's willing to jump right back in. I would say this. The last thing I would want to have happen if I'm the St. Louis Blues is to have this desire for Montgomery to eventually be the coach and to lose out on the opportunity because the timing just didn't work. And what I struggle with a lot, I struggled with this a ton. If Drew Bannister were to be let go tomorrow, it would be incredibly unfair. It would be incredibly unfair. And I am someone who likes to believe in fairness. I am someone who doesn't want to see that happen to somebody. So that's why, again, I'm not sitting here calling on Drew Bannister to be let go. That's not what I'm doing. But I also think that Jim Montgomery is a proven commodity as a high-end NHL coach. Like there's a handful of those guys around in the NHL, really good high-level coaches. And Montgomery is one of them. Plus, he's got all the ties to St. Louis that I mentioned earlier. And those teams that I mentioned with Bernie, whether it's Pittsburgh or Detroit or, you know, Bernie mentioned Nashville, whoever it might be, these underachieving teams that have some high expectations for the year, if they decide to make a move and they go get Montgomery, and then this Blues team never really turns around, and it just gets to a point where clearly it's not working with Drew Bannister, well, then you missed out on your opportunity, and you don't know when this opportunity is going to come back around. So I'm torn. I'm totally torn on this whole thing. I would love for Jim Montgomery to be the coach of the Blues, but I would hate for Drew Bannister to be let go 20 games into his tenure. Like, that seems incredibly unfair to me. I guess in a perfect world is the Blues turn things around and really, really get things rolling at some point under Bannister, and we just never have to worry about this conversation again. But that, you'd like that to happen sooner or later. And now if you're Doug Armstrong, does the leash tighten up a little bit on Bannister? Where 2 days ago, if the thought even crept into the mind of a Doug Armstrong that maybe this Bannister thing isn't working, well, then the only answer then is that you would go to Claude Julien, who is a guy who's had good success as an NHL head coach who's on the bench. Well, I don't know how comfortable they would be with that. Well, now if Montgomery's out there, it looks a little bit different. So, again, I'm trying to be really careful with the words that I'm using here. I really am. Because I don't want it to sound like I'm calling for Drew Bannister to be fired. That's not what I'm doing. And if that happens at some point in the near future, which I don't think it will, I think it would be incredibly unfair to him. But man, when Montgomery gets fired, a lot of Blues fans start talking about it. Well, fans saying it is one thing, but when I open up my Athletic app this morning, and there's a story about most likely landing spots for Jim Montgomery, and the first spot is St. Louis, and it's a national media piece. That tells me that there's other people beyond fans who are having these thoughts and having these conversations, and I find that to be somewhat interesting. All right, we will take a break. If you've got thoughts on this, we can try to get them in our final segment. It's going to be a short segment coming up in just a moment. Got a couple text messages that we will go through. We'll do that all in just a moment or so. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a moment or so left here in hour number one of the program. Coming up after the 7 o'clock news, we're going to be joined by my friend Andrew Wagner. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers. Pat Murphy, their manager, being named the Manager of the Year in the National League yesterday. So we'll talk with him about that. And also what the offseason might look like when you think about who the Cardinals will be contending with next year. We always dismiss Milwaukee. We'll probably do it again next year. Are they going to, again, kind of be a run-it-back type of team? We'll talk with them him in just a little bit. Throughout, you know, we've been talking about Jim Montgomery and whether or not there's a future for him in St. Louis and how that impacts Drew Bannister. Got a text message from 304, says, can't they just hire Jim Montgomery as an overpaid advisor and he knows he gets to be the head coach next year? If you're going to do that, you just make him the head coach now. Like, you don't... No. Like, I don't think that's the... Now, do you... If he doesn't want to... If he's not ready to jump back in full bore and he wants to do some work, some hockey work for the rest of the season, do you bring him in as an advisor or a scout or something like that because you don't want to make a coaching change? Like, I have no problem with him being brought into the organization. But if you bring him into the organization now with the idea that he's going to become the coach next year, well, then you just make that move now, and there's no reason to wait on it. Like, that's not something that you need to do. Or what happens if the Blues really turn things around and you have to bring back Drew Bannister? So, no, I don't think that's a possibility. He's getting paid from Boston, so he probably doesn't have any strong motivation to do much of anything beyond be a head coach. But I do think there is a very, very good chance that Jim Montgomery is going to be a head coach in the NHL before this season comes to an end, because there are a fair amount of underachieving NHL teams and NHL coaches get fired all the time. I don't know if it's going to happen here in St. Louis. I feel kind of dirty even talking about it, because Drew Bannister has not been given much of an opportunity yet here in his first full season as the coach. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at as we roll on here through a Wednesday evening. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Kevin Kalish. He is the head men's soccer coach at St. Louis University. They are opening up their run in the NCAA tournament coming up tomorrow evening. But right now, very happy to welcome on one of my favorite people in the world. He is my good friend, Andrew Wagner. Covers Milwaukee sports, covers the Brewers for a number of different media outlets. You follow him on social media and on Twitter at @ByAndrewWagner. Andrew, always great to talk with you. How are you?
Man, is it great to hear your voice, man. You are also one of my favorite people in the world, so always happy to come on and chat with you.
Yeah, wanted to get you on after yesterday Pat Murphy wins the National League Manager of the Year Award. First off, just from kind of a humor perspective, the fact that the Brewers did such a nice job when Craig Counsell was there, he never won the award, and then Pat Murphy wins it in his first opportunity. And I know people in Milwaukee are not sad for Craig Counsell. I just found that to be interesting that Murphy does something in his first year that Counsell never did with the Brewers.
Counsell finished second four times during his time with the Brewers. Who is that? Who is that soap opera actress? Susan Lucci.
Susan Lucci, yeah.
Never won the Emmy Award. And, you know, that's kind of what it was for Counsell. So, you know, now all of a sudden his right-hand man comes in and, you know, picks right up and keeps going and wins the award. I tell you what, Matt, you know, I've covered this team a long time. I have seen a lot of managers here. Pat Murphy is just a different breed of animal. And I know there's the whole St. Louis-Milwaukee rivalry, but you cannot help but enjoy talking to this man and root for this man. Like, he can make you run through a brick wall, and he'll do it first before asking you to do it. That's just the kind of guy he is. So a really well-deserved honor for a guy that has truly devoted his life to baseball.
Who deserves the credit here? Because I was there for a while, but even going in this past season, man, I looked at that roster and I said, "This is a third place team. This is a fourth place team in the NL Central," like many people did. And again, the Brewers overachieve, and they replaced David Stearns with Matt Arnold. They didn't have Devin Williams, and they just find a guy. They replaced Craig Counsell with Pat Murphy. They don't have Corbin Burns. They don't have Brandon Woodruff. Like, they don't have more than they have, yet they keep winning to a point where Murphy is named the manager of the year, which in many ways is kind of a team award. How does this keep happening?
It's continuity. In first part, you know, who gets the credit? Pat Murphy will be the first one to tell you that this is silly and it's stupid and it's much ado about nothing, and he doesn't get what the fuss is all about, because, like you said, it's a team award. He's got a great coaching staff in place. He had great players. It takes everyone, you know, it takes a village. At the end of the day, Murphy is the guy that kept it all together and oversaw the organization. And listen, he was the guy that got them to believe in spring training that, hey, don't listen to the outside stuff. It doesn't matter. Just go out and play. he was the one that took a bunch of young kids. And let's face it, I mean, most of those guys, they celebrated their last birthday at Chuck E. Cheese. That's how young they are. They're a bunch of kids that didn't know they were supposed to suck this year. And he got them to believe. And every time they got dealt the haymaker, he was the guy that said, hey, we got another game to play. There's no time to hang your head. You know, every injury that they went through, every loss that they went through, he was the guy that kept it all going. Now, that said, he had a great associate manager in Ricky Weeks. He had a great pitching coach in Chris Hook. Hitting coaches, every single person in that organization had to contribute, which is why Murphy, you know, says that this isn't a big deal. To the other part of your question, how does this keep happening? Another one of my favorite people, legendary Derek Gould of the Post-Dispatch, kind of wrote about this a few weeks ago, and he was talking about what the Cardinals have to do and looking around other teams in the division. You know, the Brewers realized finally, after years of going out and trying to spend money and not having much success, that they're going to have to develop their own talent. That was David Stern's mantra coming in. You know, control, develop, draft, young, controllable talent. They did that. That set the foundation. Then they went out and they got themselves one hell of a group of coaches at all different levels of the organization, especially in terms of pitching. And this is kind of taking a page out of the playbook of the Cardinals in the 2000s. I always used to joke that the Cardinals have a secret tree somewhere in the middle of Missouri where they grow right-handers that throw 98 on the black. And every time they needed another pitcher, they just went and plucked one off the tree. That's what the Brewers have suddenly turned into, is an organization that develops pitching better than anyone. Look no further than this year's relief corps. Every single player that the Brewers brought out of the bullpen this year had been released by somebody else. You know, there was a boatload of reclamation projects on there, and they have the ability to do that now, where they can't go out and sign your Garrett Cole. They can't go out and sign Corbin Burns. What they can do is go find a guy who was once a top prospect. Something went wrong. Something wasn't right. Got into a funk. Turn around, work with him, develop into someone. Look no further than Tobias Myers, who 2 years ago racked up 15, 16, 17 losses at the AAA level, got booted by the White Sox organization, landed with the Brewers, had an okay year in AAA last year, and then look what he does this year. That's the backbone of everything the Brewers have done. And then beyond all that, it's just continuity. You know, promoting from within, some people see that as being cheap, but they believe that they've got a system in place and they want to keep that going. And the best way to do that is by developing coaching, developing developers, developing scouts, and promoting them into the lead roles when they open up.
Devin Williams, a St. Louis, and the most people believe that he's going to get traded this offseason. Are you pretty sure that that's going to happen?
I'd say it's probably a little bit more than 50-50. It makes sense. And the fact that the Brewers do have a fairly reliable replacement in Trevor McGill, who was just as, if not more dominant than Devin while holding down the ninth inning role until Devin came off the injured list. You know, it makes sense. It stinks to have to give up a guy of that caliber, but that's the nature of the business. So I would not be shocked if come back from the winter meetings and there's a deal for Devin Williams. I also wouldn't be surprised if they keep him for the year and see what happens.
Willie Adames has said that he's willing to give somewhat of a discount to stay in Milwaukee. He also, from a position player standpoint, he's among the top available players in free agency, especially once you get past the Juan Sotos of the world. Is there any chance whatsoever they find a way to work out a deal with Adames, or is he for sure going somewhere?
I think there's a chance. It all comes down to Adames. Listen, money isn't the problem. You know, the Brewers would be more than happy to pay him whatever the reported AAVs are out there, $25 million a year. I don't think they would have any problem at all doing that. I think where the problem comes in is they don't want to go out and sign the 5-, 6-, 7-year deals that these big-time free agents can get from these big market teams, because deals like that rarely work out over the entire life of the deal. You're basically paying 7 years for, let's face it, for a 30-year-old, two, maybe three good years. In a small market franchise like the Brewers, which is limited geographically in terms of television revenue, just cannot justify that outlay for someone for that long. And I think that's where people don't understand. It's not a matter of the owner being cheap. It's a matter of the owner realizing this would be a good deal right now. This would not be a good deal in 5, 6, 7 years.
You've mentioned the coaching staff a couple times, and the coaching staff has lost a couple guys. Quinton Berry has joined Craig Council in Chicago. Walker McKinven, he leaves. He's going to go over and be the bench coach. He was a big part of the planning and just game planning and things like that for the Brewers. How much does it hurt that they've lost a couple guys off the staff?
You know, normally you don't really pay too much attention to coaches if they're not the hitting and pitching coach. In this case, there are two noteworthy losses because, you know, the Brewers' biggest weapon last year was their speed. They were ridiculously aggressive on the base pass, and they were very good at stealing bases. And the brains behind that operation was Q Berry. Then you take in how great their defense and pitching has been the last couple years, and that falls on Walker. His job with the Brewers was run prevention specialist or run prevention coach, whatever you want to call it. He kind of drew up the blueprint every day. So those could be two very noteworthy losses to keep an eye on, two very hard jobs to replace. I don't think the Brewers will be any less aggressive on the base paths last year because, again, they still have a bunch of young kids at lightning fast speed. They can find a coach that will specialize in base running, and I have no doubt that they will. But Quinton and Walker were two very integral parts of a staff that, again, going back to earlier, everyone played a role in Pat Murphy getting that award and the Brewers getting their success.
Last thing for you, how much fun is it just to watch Jackson Chourio play baseball on an everyday basis?
Man, he is something else. He is something else. He reminds me of when I was young and upcoming and covering some minor league ball and watching a guy by the name, well, at least I called him Al Pujolis because I didn't have a pronunciation guide in front of me, but I remember when Pujols came up and just, he didn't have everything refined yet. He was far from being a totally polished player, but every single thing that he did, you could tell he was something special. And you just see that with Jackson. And then you look at what he did over the last 2 months of this season. You know, Christian Yelich goes down, and he's the heart and soul of that offense, that lineup, that player position player group. And Chourio, at 19, 20 years old, basically took that offense, put him on his back, and dragged him down the stretch and performed better than any 20-year-old should in that situation. He is fun to watch. He is going to be fun to watch the next couple of years. Probably not so much for other fans in the division. I understand that. But yeah, this kid is something special.
Andrew Wagner covers the Brewers and Milwaukee sports. Follow him on Twitter at @ByAndrewWagner. Andrew, always great to talk to you. We'll do it again real soon.
I'll be down soon. I need some trash wings, I need a slinger, and I need some Ted Drews.
All right, perfect. That's Andrew Wagner joining us here on the program. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. A couple college basketball notes for you. The Billikens, they are back at it on Friday evening. They're going to take on Wichita State. That's going to be a late night of basketball here on KMOX. I believe pregame is at 9:15. They'll play that game at 9:30, so get ready for some late night college basketball coming up on Friday. Head coach Josh Schertz told the assembled media earlier today that Robbie Avila is doubtful for Friday. Probably will not play. Less than 50-50 is what was said, but there is a chance. So what that tells me is he's not playing on Friday, but that he's going to be playing really, really soon. And, you know, there's a few things playing out here. First off, you know, Wichita State is another one of these opportunities for SLU to get a key non-conference win, which could pay out some dividends at the end of the season. So you want to have him. But at the same time, it's not as valuable as having him during conference play. So missing out on him for another game is not the end of the world, even if you end up not winning that game. I think, you know, people will note that when they're looking at your resume, they'll take note of what games you had them and what games you did not have them. And I'm sure that will play into everything. The other thing is just that he's getting close. He's getting very close, and that's a good thing. Speaking of college basketball, big game tonight. You know, we had Steve Greenberg from Chicago on the other day, and he talked about this being, for Illinois, maybe the most talented team since Brad Underwood has been around. Well, they've got an opportunity to show that off tonight. They're playing what's on technically a neutral floor in Birmingham, Alabama. It will still be pro-Alabama. That's who they play tonight. But this is the game of the night. This is the only matchup between two top 25 teams as Illinois, the number 25 team in the nation, takes on number 8 Alabama. So a huge opportunity for the Fighting Illini tonight, and that would be a great early season non-conference win for them. The head coach of St. Louis University men's soccer, Kevin Kalish, he joins us next here on KMOX. It's Great Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I'll tell you what, it is a great time for SLU soccer right now. We've talked about the women's soccer team already winning a game in the NCAA tournament, and now the men, they are set to open up their run in the tournament on Thursday evening as they will play host to Kansas City, and we're very happy right now to welcome on the head coach of the St. Louis University men's soccer team, Coach Kevin Kalish. Coach, thanks for the time. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Doing great.
How much fun is it right now? We're both this time of year, and not only is your program doing special things, but like I mentioned, the women's program doing some pretty cool things as well.
Yeah, I think November is a special month around Billiken land here. We we take pride in being able to play this time of year and be able to get to not only play in the NCAA tournament, but to get a home game. These are the things you remember.
When the regular season comes to an end or the A-10 championship comes to an end and you guys end up falling, is there nerves about getting that at-large bid, or you feel pretty good that you're in good shape to get it?
You know, I felt good about this year's body of work. Our strength of schedule was ranked third in the country, so we had the third hardest schedule of any 215 teams or so. So I felt like we had a winning record. We played a very difficult schedule. We got results against top teams. We played 9 different teams that were in the NCAA tournament this year. So I felt good about where we were at. I guess you never know with some of the conference tournaments, you know, how many upsets there's going to be and how many bids are going to be stolen by teams that maybe wouldn't have gotten in the tournament otherwise. So there's always some apprehension, but I did. It's great to hear our name called, I'll be honest with you. But it was an exciting day for us, no doubt.
You mentioned the fact that it's great that you get a home game. What does it mean for the program that you're able to start out the tournament with a home matchup?
Yeah, look, I think we're a different team at home in some ways. We were undefeated this year at home. We've had a great home record over the last handful of years playing in Herman, playing in front of the St. Louis fans. So, I know our guys are excited to be back home. We had a long road trip in the conference tournament where we had to win some difficult games on the road, and we're excited to be back at Herman. Field looks fantastic. I know our guys will be ready to go.
When you go through that playing the 3 games basically in a week or so, how much time do you give your team to kind of catch their breath and rest before jumping right back in and getting ready for this next one?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we spend a lot of time in study halls and really kind of catching up a lot on academics when we're on the road. We'll give guys 24 hours or so just to decompress and recover physically and catch up on schoolwork. And the coaching staff will then start to do a deep dive into the next opponent and start to prepare the game plan. So, there's not a ton of time in between games, like right around 3 days. So we would probably say 24 hours, and then and here we go, on to the next one.
You've got a matchup against a Kansas City team. What have you learned about them? How challenging of a matchup will this be?
Yeah, very good team. Ryan's done a great job there. We haven't played Kansas City since the pandemic year, to be honest with you. So we haven't seen each other in a few years, but I've watched them on video. Obviously, they had some great success winning their conference. They had some really good success against some top teams in Denver and Missouri State. So they're an experienced group, very technical group. It'll be like every game I feel like this year. It's going to be a close one. It's going to come down to who can make some plays in the boxes. But, we're looking forward to competing on Thursday.
We're talking with SLU men's soccer coach Kevin Kalish. His team is going to open up the NCAA tournament coming up tomorrow evening when they match up against Kansas City. That's going to be a 7 o'clock start here in St. Louis. This probably doesn't matter so much once you get into the NCAA tournament, but do you enjoy the fact that you are able to match up against a team that regionally is pretty close to you?
Yeah, I do. I think it's good for the players not to be able to have to, you know, again, fly all the way across the country and travel just takes a lot out of you, just speaking from experience over the last 10 days or so. And so I think for us to be able to sleep in our own beds, to be able to, you know, prepare on our field, have a little bit more of a routine. And I think it's just, it allows us a bit more, our base routine where we can kind of get the best out of each other. So, very, very beneficial. And obviously we've been down to Springfield earlier this year, so we're familiar with that trip as well. If we're fortunate enough to get a result tomorrow night.
Does the style of play, or does it feel, you know, in some sports when you get to the playoffs, like you think about playoff hockey and you think about playoff basketball, like it changes when you get into the postseason in men's college soccer? Does it change?
Yeah, I think it does at every level. I think the game just tightens up a bit, right? I think there's a little bit less risk across the board. I think teams are a bit more guarded in terms of their approach. And, obviously you're going to be fairly proactive and try to attack teams. But at the same time, I think generally speaking, teams aren't going to, open up and they're going to prey on your mistakes more than maybe vice versa. So, yeah, it's definitely more intense. I think every restart matters. The games are a bit tighter, a little bit more, more compact as a whole. And I think there'll be less chances than most regular season games in some ways. It just tightens up a bit.
Tickets are available. The game's going to start at 7:00 at Herman Stadium. $12 for an adult ticket, $6 for a youth ticket. All seating, general admission. So folks need to get there ASAP as early as possible and get the best possible seat. I know your faithful are going to be there, and you've got great fans who have supported you all year long, but you're talking to a lot of people probably who have never attended a SLU men's soccer game. What's the reason? What are they going to see? What are they going to experience if they come out tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a fantastic college soccer game. I think you're gonna see a lot of local players, maybe that you're familiar with from high schools or from clubs around the area. I think compete in a very exciting, competitive college game. I think that's one of the best parts about St. Louis is they understand the sport, they value the sport, and they really appreciate winners. And so there's no better time than whether it's, like you mentioned before, playoff hockey or playoff soccer or playoff baseball. I think that's the best time of the year to kind of go and start following your favorite teams and your hometown teams.
Since you mentioned it, I'm looking at your roster, and you do have a lot of kids from the region. As you're going through the recruiting process, how important is it that you are able to keep some of the best soccer talent within a couple hours of SLU and in the St. Louis metro area, making sure that you're able to keep them here?
Yeah, it's important. It's really important to me. I think it's our program philosophy. I was very fortunate to play here at SLU and graduate, and my college experience really shaped me as an individual. And so, for me, it's about giving especially domestic players, local players, Midwest players, opportunities to have that same experience. We'll always sprinkle in a few international players that I think helps add to the culture and the environment in the locker room, but Our bread and butter will be, St. Louis kids, Midwestern kids that we feel fit our values and are, just great kids from great families and high character, hardworking. And that's kind of our philosophy here at SLU, and I think it's worked well for us. Over the last handful of years.
Kevin Kalish is leading his SLU men's soccer team into a matchup against Kansas City. That's tomorrow night, Herman Stadium, 7:00. Tickets available, slubillikens.com. Coach, thank you for the time. Best of luck, and hopefully we're talking to you maybe a couple more times before all is said and done here in your postseason run.
That would be awesome. Thanks a bunch for the time.
That is Coach Kevin Kalish joining us here on the program. Again, SLU men's soccer. Kansas City is the opponent. Always fun when St. Louis and Kansas City can play against each other, just generally speaking. And now these two universities matching up. Formerly UMKC, but now they go just by Kansas City. The old Kangaroos are rolling into town. 7:00 start tomorrow. Again, tickets very affordable. $12 for adults. And you can get cheaper tickets for kids. SLUbillikens.com. 7:00 coming up tomorrow night. The
The women, by the way, are going to play their next tournament game coming up on Friday night. They are going to be on the road as they are set to take on USC. That's going to be Friday night at 7 o'clock. We are efforting, hope that the timing and everything works out. We've got a short show tomorrow with Thursday night football, but we are hoping to get Coach Katie Shields back onto the program tomorrow to preview what's going to be coming up on Thursday or Friday evening for the women as they match up against USC. Just, man, I'll tell you what, so much momentum right now when you talk about SLU Billikens Athletics, the two soccer teams in their respective NCAA tournaments, all the excitement about what's going on with men's basketball, the women's basketball team, what they've been able to do over the last couple years. Just lots of good things going on, and it's fun to be able to watch and see just everything that's taking place there with Billikens Athletics. All right, one more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We're back at it here on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley into our final segment of the program tonight, but don't go anywhere. Of course, at 8 o'clock, we've got the Gas House Gang rolling your way. Tonight's program is going to feature myself and Tom Ackerman. Of course, we record the Gas House Gang at 12 noon, Monday through Friday, where you can watch it as a digital program on our various social media channels, whether it's Facebook or YouTube or on Twitter. And then we play it as a radio program each night at 8 o'clock. So we've got the Gas House Gang coming our way in just a few moments. We talk a lot of Cardinals baseball, as we always do. Also, get into a little bit of the Blues. And we reminisce a bit about KMOX. It is KMOX Day, so we talk through KMOX a little bit, as Tom obviously has been at KMOX for a very, very, very long time. And while I've only been working for KMOX for a couple years, KMOX has been in the heart of me and my family for many years. So we get into all that coming up in just a little while. Before we get out of here, though, I wanted to touch on two other baseball stories before the day is over. Baseball has a problem with homeless teams. This is crazy. This is really crazy. When you think about the current situation where in the United States of America and Canada, we'll throw Canada in there as well, there are multiple cities that I have no doubt would be able to host Major League Baseball. That could be a home to a Major League Baseball team. Off the top of my head, Nashville, Portland, Charlotte, I'm missing a bunch of San Antonio, Montreal. That's the Canadian one. So there are cities, and I think most of those cities that if you told them tomorrow, hey, we'll give you a Major League Baseball team, but you have to figure out a way to get a stadium built, I think most of those cities would be able to do that. San Antonio could. Nashville could. I have no doubt. Maybe Portland would have issues with it, and maybe that's part of why the push for Major League Baseball in Portland has dropped off a little bit. But most of those cities, I even bet in Charlotte, they could figure out a way. Most of those cities that if they are given the guarantee of having a Major League Baseball team, they're going to get a stadium built. So you have that. You have all these cities that would be perfectly good homes to Major League Baseball teams. And Major League Baseball does want to expand. They want to add two more teams. They absolutely do. And they're going to at some point in time. It's a win, not if situation when it comes to Major League Baseball adding teams. But Rob Manfred, he has said this before, and he'll continue to say it. You can't start talking about expansion until you know where the long-term homes of your current teams are. And we've discussed a lot the situation with the A's moving out of Oakland. They want to get into Vegas. Seems more likely than not that Las Vegas is where the A's are going to end up, but not a guarantee. That stadium is not a guarantee for Las Vegas. There is still absolutely a possibility that that ends up falling through. For the time being, the A's are going to play at a AAA ballpark in Sacramento. And who knows, maybe Sacramento is a city that falls in love with them and they end up building a new ballpark in Sacramento and they become the long-term Sacramento A's. I guess that is at least a possibility with the owner of the Kings being connected to the owner of the A's. Those two could come together and figure out a way to make that happen.
So that's one situation, and that's people doing things to themselves. That's the A's being greedy about the Oakland situation and then putting themselves in a spot where they have become homeless. So they're going to play at AAA ballpark for probably 3 years. Who knows what it looks like after that? Well, the other thing that's come down here recently, and if you've heard me talk about this much, you've heard me because we've talked a lot about the Tampa Bay Rays and their home moving forward, and they're going to play at a minor league ballpark this upcoming season in Tampa because of the damage that was done to Tropicana Field. And as we have discussed this here recently, one of the things that we've talked about is, does it make sense for them to go spend $60 million on a new roof for Tropicana Field when they've got a new ballpark that is set to open in 2028? Well, to quote Lee Corso, not so fast, my friends. The new stadium being ready for 2028 in the Tampa area now seems unlikely, if not impossible, essentially turning the Rays, just like the A's, into a homeless baseball team. The Rays have nothing set in stone when it comes to their long-term future, because the agreement that they had, which was connected to bonds that were going to be put out for the public share of the cost of the new ballpark. Well, the commission just got some new commissioners that were voted in at the last election, and nothing had actually been 100% totally approved. And now all of a sudden, with these two new elected members of the commission, they voted earlier this week to delay consideration of the financing bonds until their meeting in mid-December. We'll see if they actually vote on it at that point in time. The Rays sent a letter to the commission, and they said that they've already spent $50 million for the early work on the bonds, and they are at a point now where they cannot proceed any further because they need to know they've already spent $50 million. They're not going to go spend more money when maybe these bonds are not going to end up getting approved. And the Rays, like most people, thought that this was just a foregone conclusion, signed, sealed, delivered, everything, I guess, sealed and delivered, not signed, that they were going to get it done. The Rays have also made it very clear that they don't know where they're going to play beyond this upcoming season. They're going to go play in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field, which is a minor league facility for this year, because Tropicana Field's not available because the roof got ripped off during the hurricane. And if they for sure were going to get the new ballpark ready for 2028, then the two options were to continue to play in a minor league facility in the Tampa area through 2028, or to come up with the $60 million to repair the roof and spend a couple more years at Tropicana Field. Well, now that they don't know if they're going to be into a new ballpark in 2028, anything's on the table. So they've got a possibility that they could move out of the Tampa area. And this is where it comes back to what I was saying earlier. There are a lot of cities that absolutely would love to have Major League Baseball that could get a ballpark done, and the Rays don't, they're homeless. You have two homeless teams in baseball. This seems like a problem that just did not need to exist. There's no reason that this had to happen, but here we are. So if this county commission in Florida doesn't figure out a way to get this done, this upcoming season is very likely the final year that the Rays will play in the Tampa area. And they will end up going somewhere else moving forward, and they will find a new long-term home. And the A's need to find a new long-term home. And if you're Rob Manfred, you need those teams to find their long-term homes, because then you can really talk about expansion, which is something that they want to do. And expansion is going to be a major windfall for owners. There's an expansion fee that goes along with every team that comes in, and then that money gets distributed across all teams across Major League Baseball. There's going to be big time money coming in, and they got to get this thing figured out. So I'm bummed. It looked like the deal was done for the new stadium in Tampa, and now because of these delays, it's not going to be ready for 2028. That's almost assured. And what happens beyond that? Who knows? Just crazy. Can you imagine this happening in another sport where a couple teams don't have homes anymore? Like, this is such a baseball problem. This isn't a problem that other teams end up having.
and or other, you know, other sports end up having it. It's kind of odd. The other thing I want to talk about real quick, and I need to do a little bit more research on this, and I don't even know how. This is why I talk about this as the final thing in the show, because this is one of those topics that I'm interested in. I'm not sure how much the audience is, but there is a new bill that's going to be introduced by Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin. It's going to be called the Fair Ball Act, and it is a bill that would protect minor league baseball players from previous legislation that exempted them from wage and hour laws. So there was a spending bill back in 2018 that included the Save America's Pastime Act, and essentially inside of that, the minor league baseball teams were given some exemptions when it came to how much they had to actually pay players and whether hourly wages were something that was going to be something or not. Now, minor league players unionized with the Major League Baseball Players Association in September of 2022. They struck a deal on a collective bargaining agreement, and inside of that collective bargaining agreement, salaries and benefits went up big time, big time. And before that, I mean, it was they were only making money during the season. Some guys were making like $1,000 a month. There was no housing stipend, stuff like that. So it was a very tough spot for minor league players to be in, and it is much better now connected to this the collective bargaining agreement that minor leaguers have. However, that is going to expire at some point. They're going to have to renegotiate the CBA, and as they go to that and they renegotiate it, these minor league owners have behind them the Save America's Pastime Act, which allows them not to pay players, even a working minimum wage, things like that. So we'll see how this plays out. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I'm smart enough to be able to really tell you what's going to go on here. Like, the way things are right now, I think is pretty good, especially compared to what it used to be like for minor league baseball players. But just the fact that the collective bargaining agreement could come up and there's no guarantees that these players would get the benefits that they have right now, it's something to definitely keep an eye on moving forward, because this does impact the way baseball players come up. Obviously, you need the minor leagues to be able to get these guys through. And I worked in minor league baseball for years, and I worked in minor league baseball way before the rules that are in place right now were in place. And it was tough. It was, if you weren't one of these bonus babies who got a big contract or a big signing bonus when you were drafted, it was not easy to make it through. And in many ways, there was a lot of family support and things like that that you needed. I remember guys would rent apartments and put, you know, 6, 7, 8 guys in a single apartment and have guys sleeping on in sleeping bags on the floor just because they can't afford anything more than that. That doesn't exist anymore. Now there is housing that is provided through the baseball teams, and that's really good. But this is something that needs to get worked through. And I don't know enough about this bill if this is the answer or not. But you certainly want minor league baseball players to be treated in a humane way, which again I think they are right now, based off the agreement that they have, but that's going to expire. And also the other side of that is when baseball all of a sudden had to start paying minor leaguers more money and had to start paying for housing and things like that, you know what also ended up happening? A ton of minor league baseball teams went away when they reorganized minor league baseball. You know, you used to have AAA, AA, High A, Low A, and then a bunch of short season teams. They basically got rid of all the short season teams, and they redid all of minor league baseball. And I can tell you, as somebody who worked for a minor league baseball team that does not exist anymore, actually two minor league baseball teams that do not exist anymore in their original form, they are no longer affiliated minor league teams with players that move through there to eventually get to a big league team, that had a profound impact on communities. and it had a profound impact on the opportunities. Because with less teams, there's less roster spots, there's less opportunities for some undrafted guy to try to fight their way through. And that doesn't happen all that often, but it does happen certainly on occasion, and that doesn't exist anymore. So that's how baseball dealt with the when they had to start paying players more and they had other expenses. The way they started to deal with that was they literally got rid of minor league baseball teams, meaning they literally had less players in the system that they had to pay. And that's kind of the backdrop to all of this as well. All right, that is going to do it for the program today. Thanks so much for being tuned in. Short show tomorrow. We're going to go just for a half hour leading into Thursday Night Football and then back at it for a full show coming up on Friday. Up next, it's the Gas House Gang. You're not done with me quite yet. Myself and Tom Ackerman, we've got you for the Gas House Gang. And that begins after the 8 o'clock news right here on KMOX.